strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, I appreciate you spending some time with us on the show. There have been a lot of bombshells last week dropped. We had, you know, the Supreme Court thing and what happened with the abortion ruling and the repealing of the 1864 law. And yes, I understand in 1977 it was reaffirmed. I agree with all of that in principle that it was reaffirmed. It was still in the 1970s. The outcry from people in Arizona after the Dobbs decision and Roe getting sent back to the states, we knew we were going to wrestle with this. So what do we do? But that was one of the big things that happened, of course. Then it was the issue with the electors and what's being called fake electors and what happened there. And so we've had a lot of big news stories, and we raced through a lot of them as much as we could to get the new information. And now that the dust is beginning to settle, we had the attorney general on. We had Chris Mays on, the attorney general, and she said there were a lot of options. She said, we're not done fighting. There's a couple of different things we can do. And one of them was to ask the Arizona Supreme Court to revisit, to reconsider the abortion ruling. The Arizona Supreme Court on Friday denied that, said they're not going to do it. The state Supreme Court responded to the 32-page motion with one sentence decision to deny it. The near total abortion ban could go into effect in Arizona in early June, which we now know it's not going to happen. The state legislature has advanced a bill to repeal the 1864 law. So the Senate has to take it up. I think it's going to pass there. It was going to have an easier time in the Senate than it did in the House. They could vote as early as Wednesday. If it passes, it would not take effect for 90 days at the end of the legislative session, depending on when it happens. I want to address two issues in this. I've mentioned I've had both sides of the Republican side of this conversation on as well. We had Timothy Dunn on, who is a legislator from the West Valley, and he was one of the Republicans, along with Wilmoth and Gress, who voted with the Democrats in the House to repeal, to send it over to the Senate. We then had on in the studio with us the Speaker of the House, Ben Thoma, who was also adamantly pro-life. And he said he was very gracious in his disagreement with the representative who voted with the Democrats. Here's the issue with all of this, and this is where I wish the fight was in a different place. Just give me a moment to editorialize about this. I am adamantly pro-life as well. And if I were someone in the state legislature and I'm fighting this fight, I would be asking the general public, why are you demonizing me because I want to stop abortions? Because I believe it's a human life. If you go and look, and if you can look them up online, and if you want to be informed, go and look at the development of a child at 4 weeks, at 8 weeks, at 12 weeks. Go look at 15 weeks. And see if that looks like a person to you. Because what's interesting is the piece of legislation, I shouldn't say legislation, the referendum that's gotten the signatures to get on the ballot for November. Even they say in their piece, which I think is way too broad, when they say it goes too far, I think they left the door open intentionally for it to be interpreted any way you want to interpret it, which I think is dangerous. When you say healthcare professional and you don't say doctor, then, and you don't specify what kind of a doctor, it's left to that kind of interpretation. Is, you know, what's a healthcare professional? Define that. Well, it's not defined there, so we're going to go to court to define it. When they talk about not just the life of the mother, but the mental health, what does that mean? If somebody that's a mental health professional says this person is too depressed to have a child because of that, so I don't want to fight the law, but I think when you look at that. Even they say in their referendum, viability, pregnancy viability. So once again, we're arguing about when life begins. That has always been this core argument. The argument that this is about a woman's body, that I'm saying that I want to control someone else's body. Even the people that wrote the piece of what would alter the Constitution, the referendum, even they acknowledge that at some point in the womb, it becomes a child and deserves protection under our Constitution, both in the state of Arizona and the U.S. Constitution. They say it in the referendum. Until the viability of pregnancy. So even they acknowledge in that at some point this becomes a human life and it deserves protection. If not, then you should be able to abort a child up until the moment it's born. And I don't think 90% of Americans believe that to be true. So we've always wrestled with, when does life begin? Why aren't, and I want to defend the pro-life crowd, and I don't think I've defended them enough in this regard. The people that I know that are pro-life and I've corresponded with that are pro-life, that I keep in touch with that are pro-life, this honestly and truly is not about controlling a woman's body and telling her what she can and can't do. They care deeply about mothers. Many of them are mothers. This isn't about not caring if you live or die. This is about, in most cases, when abortions are done, it is done out of for, and I don't want to say convenience because it diminishes the emotional horror for a lot of women. But it is something where a woman could carry the child to term, give it up for adoption if necessary. So people believe that's a human life, maybe much earlier than other people wrestle with. 15 weeks is what was agreed upon. But even then, if you go online and you look up pictures, you can see yourself that at 15 weeks, there's no doubt that that's a human being. If you look at it, if you look at the evidence. So what the defense is this, you have people that disagree. I would say, and many others in my camp would say, life begins at conception, or certainly much earlier than you believe that pregnancy, let's call it viability, much earlier than you think that pregnancy is viable. And that's where the argument should lie. But instead, it becomes an emotional argument that somehow people like me, an older man, I should keep my mouth shut on the issue. I have no right to tell a woman what to do with her body. But even what you're going to vote for in November acknowledges that there is a point in a pregnancy. I think they allude to 24 weeks, that there is a point in a pregnancy where that pregnancy is now a child, and even they say they're somewhere where you shouldn't be able to abort the pregnancy, except for the life of the mother. So even they acknowledge that at some point in the womb, it becomes a human life. Now, why don't we argue about that? Why isn't that where the argument is had? And it should be a reasonable argument. If we all acknowledge at some point in a pregnancy, that mother is carrying a human life, where is that? Where is the acceptable line to all of us? For many people, it's nowhere. If the mother's life is not in danger, if the pregnancy is that, you know, the child's not stillborn or going to die before at childbirth, if it's not for the life of the child, you know what I mean? If it's not in that life-saving necessity for the mother, when does it become a life? When is it then protected? And instead of us having that intellectual conversation where we don't hate each other, it becomes this political football. And every pro-life person I know, we all get involved in the conversation. But in the end, these are good people. This isn't specifically about Speaker Toma, although it is, because he was such a gracious, kind person about it. It's about people saying, we firmly believe it's a human life much earlier than you believe it's a human life. So we're saying it should be protected much earlier than you're saying it should be protected. Let's argue about that. Let's have a civil argument about that instead of this, keep your laws off my body and all this other stuff. And I think if they were able to, and when I say they, I mean the pro-life crowd, if they were able to craft that argument in that way, they would win over many, many, many more people, because most Americans believe at some point in the womb, it is a child. Most people don't believe in late-term abortions. Most people don't believe in those things. So where's the line? I'm not going to get the line I want necessarily, and you're not going to get the line you want, but where's an acceptable place then? I just think it's a better conversation to have. It's certainly more productive to have that conversation. In a moment, we are going to talk about the border crisis. We are now seeing that a majority of Democrats are believing that the border issue is a real crisis. I'm going to give you some numbers and then ask a couple of questions. We'll do that coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Art, I want to talk about the border and start with some headlines, and I'm going to ask a very, very, very important message. On Friday, I believe it was Friday, we had Congressman Juan Sisgamani. No, it was Thursday. We had him in studio, I believe. And Juan Sisgamani was in studio with us, and he was talking about a bipartisan trip to the border, a two-day trip to the border that included him. It was put together with Democrat Congressman Greg Stanton from Arizona. So you've got a Democrat and Greg Stanton and a Republican in Juan Sisgamani, both of them from a border state, leading a bipartisan delegation, some of the reps from California, some from New York, but a bipartisan delegation going down to the border. And the purpose was to educate people on what's really happening on the border. And so here is something. I got this from Axios Phoenix. 53% of Democrats said there is a real crisis at the border rather than it just being a politically driven media narrative. So more, now you've got a plethora of Democrats, a majority of Democrats that believe that this is a real crisis now. 59% of Democrats said illegal immigration was a problem. Not immigration. Illegal immigration is a problem. So you're starting to see a majority of Democrats, along with a big majority of independents and certainly a large majority of Republicans, talking about the need for border security. The real migrant bus king of North America isn't the Texas governor, it's Mexico's president, is the other headline. It took Anna Elizabeth Melgar four tries to reach the U.S. border. Each time she made her way north, Mexican immigration authorities caught her and bussed her south. Not her home country of El Salvador, but a southern Mexico city. It said, if you catch me and I am a migrant, send me back to my country while resting in a Catholic shelter in the Mexican border town of Eagle Pass, Texas. I get it. I don't belong here. But what is the nonsense you're sending me south in Mexico? It's illogical. Well, that's, you know, that's Mexico trying to do its part to tell people it's not worth the risk of going north. But when you look at this Axios story with the number, 30% of Democrats overall said they would at least somewhat support ending automatic citizenship for children born in the U.S. that were not children of U.S. citizens. 42% of Democrats said they would support mass deportations of undocumented immigrants. That is the Trump plan. You've now got 42% of Democrats. So this is a warning to the people out there that are open borders. I talked about the issue of abortion a few moments ago, and I talked about people that are pro-life like I am and having to decide, are you going to stand your ground and say this is the exact thing we want, or are you taking a look at statistics and realizing you're going to have to settle on something that you don't necessarily think is right, but it's going to protect as many lives as possible? This question here I want to ask. If you have now a majority of Democrats that believe that illegal immigration is a problem, and you also have a majority of Democrats that believe that there is a real crisis at the southern border, you are seeing 45% of Democrats talking about mass deportations. Why is it that we cannot get anyone in the Congress to move on a bipartisan piece of legislation? Why aren't we all more frustrated about that? You've got what it sounds like is a fairly good working relationship between Stanton and Sisgamani. Sisgamani explained when he was in the studio last week that he and Stanton worked together because at one point Sisgamani worked for Governor Ducey at the same time that Stanton was the mayor of Phoenix. So they had a working relationship, and they do now. There are many, many places where they will stand on opposite sides of an issue and vehemently state their case and fight against each other when they believe that each is right and the other is wrong. But when you have a situation where more and more people are agreeing and they're working together, why is it that something can't get done? The president said he's open to the idea of another border bill. But the fight against that previous border bill was it didn't do anything to really secure the border. You are seeing more and more Americans are beginning to understand that the three buckets of the border, border security, immigration, and commerce and trade, that those three buckets stand individually. But without border security, the others don't matter either. It doesn't matter what immigration laws you have in place. We've got plenty of them. We have plenty of existing immigration laws that could be enforced to slow the flow of people into this country down dramatically. But it's not, they're not being enforced. Without the border security to do that, it doesn't matter. I think many people are starting to agree with it. Why does it take a national crisis of millions of people here New York is still fighting it. Denver is still fighting it. Chicago is. D.C. is. The state of Massachusetts. You're seeing it all over the country. It has become a national story in the American people. Well, I think more than anything else, I think it's because the American people haven't said to their representation, get something done on this or else. There have been times in my life, especially in the world I've been in with this show, and watching very closely what Congress responds to. There have been times when an issue has come up and people have shut down the switchboards at the House of Representatives, to the offices of members of Congress, because so many people are calling and voicing displeasure. When you hear Democrat voters in Chicago, Illinois, sound like Republicans in Southern Arizona, you have to start looking at that and saying, well, why are we not getting results? At some point, I do believe wholeheartedly that the president of the United States can and should change his policies with executive orders to make it very difficult to apply for asylum inside the U.S. I think he should do it tomorrow. I think he should do it today. But the problem is he's not. The Congress should be acting with legislation to send a message and send it to the president and see if the president has the courage to veto it if it doesn't do what he wants, or sign it if he believes that it does. But it's a great question. If we are now seeing large numbers of Democrats vote with independents, or at least agree with independents and Republicans, why is the Congress not moving? And it should be something we consider when we look at November. I think it's an important issue. Coming up, we'll talk about a Valley High School that at graduation wants some of their students to be able to graduate with a 2-year college degree. Talk about lofty goals. I think it's terrific. We'll tell you what's going on with that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks for being here. Happy Monday. Chris Lopez Jolly, 17, is a senior at Coronado High School, but he is waiting until college to get started on. He's not waiting until college to get started on his dream. So aiming for a career in fashion design, he already owns a vintage clothing business and is taking advantage of the marketing and social networking course offered by Scottsdale Community College at his school to elevate his business while earning college credit. That's how this story starts at AZ Central. The headline is graduate high school with a 2-year college degree. That's the goal in Scottsdale. I will say this. I learned at a very young age that if you challenge, especially young people, if you challenge them, they will generally rise to the challenge. When you look at every elite organization, whatever it is, it pushes you to places you didn't know that you could go. And I admire it. I don't know that I could stand up to the test. When I've watched a lot of documentaries, when the Navy SEALs became a fascination with America, there were so many documentaries. There's one that's called Buds, and it's a 3-part series about basic underwater demolition school, which is Bud's training. It's the basics for becoming a Navy SEAL. You've got to pass through Bud's training to go on to the teams to learn more and to become a Navy SEAL. And I've been privileged to meet a number of people that have been through SEAL training, and they are some of the most intelligent, determined, but at the same time, quietly self-confident people I've ever met. I've had friends that I went to high school with that became Army Rangers and Green Berets, and they have become special forces in the United States military. Every one of those organizations has a basic skills test at the beginning of training to see if you have what it takes to overcome your mental shortcomings, meaning you set the bar for yourself too low. Can you push past what you thought you could do into what you can do? And you filter that down to other things. When I was, and I always go back to sports, but coaching young people. When I was coaching in Pop Warner football, which sounds silly, but I want you to hear, we're talking about 12-year-old young men. And sometimes 12-year-old young girls that still want to, they're still at the same physical level that they can play with the boys. And we recruited in an area, because in Pop Warner football, they have recruiting districts. We recruited in an area of a very working class, kind of working poor neighborhood. And there really wasn't much academic success because academics were not prioritized by many people. But the guys I coached with, we told these kids, you are going to maintain at least a C average in school. We want you to have a B average. You're going to do your homework. If you don't do your homework and we find out about it, you're going to come to practice. You're going to sit at a picnic table and you're going to do your homework while everybody else practices. But if you don't practice, you don't play, which means on game day on Saturday, you're going to be a water boy. You're going to bring the water onto the field to the players. You're going to support your team. But we placed an emphasis on academics, and those young people were able to excel, and every one of those kids went on to be successful. I still have those kids that reach out to us and call us coach, but we set the standard for them high, and we showed them that you can accomplish anything if you want to, on the football field or off of it. The idea of setting a goal here, and I don't know that what's going on at Coronado High School is the answer to everybody's problems, but you hear about school districts getting rid of AP courses, advanced placement, getting rid of all of these other advanced courses in the name of equity so that the students that are not excelling to that level don't feel bad. Or you have a place that says you can do a lot more than you think you can do. A lot more than you think you can do. If you've ever seen the movie Remember the Titans, there's one of the guys in the movie that says, I'm not cut out for college and never be able to make it. And the coach, Denzel Washington's character, said, you bring me your homework every week and we're going to talk about it. He says, if you don't go to college, it's not because you're not prepared. And he helps this kid and the kid ends up going to college. We are setting the bar way too low for people. This is across the board. This is not a shot at teachers. This is just across the board. Having a school in Scottsdale, and someone's going to say, well, that's different because it's Scottsdale. No, it isn't. That there are students everywhere that can achieve great things when someone tells them all you got to do is work hard and you can achieve great things. The trust has been bruised. Six concerns about Arizona schools have about federal poverty funds. The superintendent, financial officers, and other school leaders packed a state board of education meeting to address these multiple concerns about it. Lack of communication and transparency. Speakers accused the Department of Education of failing to explain itself or give proper notice about funding changes, which I don't necessarily believe is true. I don't have any reason to defend the superintendent on anything. Tom Horn, I've had him on the show a number of times, but I'm not defending him personally. I'm just telling you that they have been talking about this for a long time. Federal funding is based on enrollment. And when the money comes in, the Department of Education distributes that money. What they did was they held back some of that money because they didn't know what the final number for the rest of the year was going to be. And instead of issuing money to schools that would start spending it and sweeping it back later, they're waiting for the federal government to tell them the exact amount of money they're going to get for what's known as a Title I school before they distributed the money. There's nothing wrong with that. This battle back and forth in education, I understand, but when it's based on political differences and that's the only thing that's happening, it gets upsetting to many people. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is because the argument always seems to be about poorer schools and how poorer school districts underperform. But I think part of it is we also make excuses in this sense. There is a reality in some people's minds about what they can and can't accomplish. When you look at what sports do for people, and I know this sounds, I don't know, maybe people are going to get upset about this analogy. When you see a kid who comes from a neighborhood where there's high crime, not very many two-parent homes, where not both parents are involved in their lives, and you hear about them on the athletic field, developing a skill set that gets them a college scholarship and gets them to the NFL or gets them to the NBA or gets them to the Major League Baseball or whatever it is. We pump our fists in the air of overcoming and work ethic. And that is something, and I don't care if it's in the classroom or if it's on the athletic field, court, whatever you want to call it. If you don't have a dedication to making yourself better every day, you will get left behind at the highest level. There are some people that are born with great athletic skills. I've mentioned before that I grew up playing sports with Deion Sanders. We were on the same Pop Warner football team together. And there was no doubt that Deion is gifted beyond most people's dreams with athletic ability. But I can tell you this, if Deion Sanders did not have a work ethic that matched his skill set, he would have been pedestrian at a certain level. He would have been a good college player, and I don't know how good he would have been in the pros. Every time you look at a professional football player, you look at someone that has a skill set that's just amazing, but they don't have a work ethic to match. And if they don't have the work ethic to match, they generally underachieve. There aren't very many people that have ever excelled at sports that just kind of took it for granted and didn't work like crazy at it. It's the same thing with academics. Anything is achievable if you develop it. And we need to do a better job of getting people to do that. What we're going to do in a moment is we're going to talk about the Phoenix Police Department because they made a big bust and they're calling these women the makeup mafia. We're going to talk about this arrest and numbers growing in police departments across the nation. We're going to get to that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
I don't think there is a coincidence when the attitudes of the American people toward crime has changed, where we have stopped demonizing the police and we have stopped elevating the criminals to a hero status. That doesn't eliminate police doing things wrong at some time. So this weekend, yesterday, I had to go to my old house. And so I got off the 51 at Thomas and I went east on Thomas and I was going to 32nd Street in Thomas where I had to turn. And so as I was at 24th Street at the light, there was a police helicopter above Phoenix PD and there was a Phoenix PD vehicle up the street a little ways, probably at about 27th Street. And they were in the eastbound lane. So we were all kind of looking at each other in traffic. We wonder what's going on up there because the helicopter was overhead. So the light turned green and we all kept going east on Thomas. And all of a sudden, about five or six cars, we were kind of caught up in a police scene. There were police vehicles, Phoenix PD vehicles coming from different directions. And we were right on the south side of the road were two officers. And these two officers had their guns pointed at a suspect, which was in plain view to all of us as police vehicles were racing in between to back up their partners. So we kind of got a glimpse for a minute of what was happening in that instant where a police officer's life gets to be very, very intense, where they've got to make some major decisions. So these officers, both of these officers were had their guns pointed at a suspect. I mean, obviously behaving very professionally, but anytime I want you to think of a scenario in your life, I have been involved in a lot of issues. And what I mean by that is I'm a very excitable person. I've got no problem with an argument or a confrontation. I've had physical altercations in my life when I was younger. I've had verbal altercations a lot in my life. I've got no problem defending myself or standing my ground in an issue. I've never pulled a gun on a human being. I've never had a gun pulled on me. I've never been in a situation where a firearm was necessary. So I'm saying this on a daily basis, law enforcement officers across this country have to make split second decisions that could take the life of another human being or could cost them their lives. These two women, these two Phoenix police officers were defending themselves and backup was coming. But for the moments before their backup got there, these two officers had to make sure that they were defending themselves if necessary, but at the same time, not shooting at a suspect that maybe didn't need to be shot at. I have no idea what the circumstances were. We continued as soon as, you know, we were trapped there for a second in the idea, and I was at least, I don't know what the other cars were thinking. Do I keep going to get away from this scene while police vehicles are coming at us? You're always told move to the right, which we didn't do because that's where the incident was happening. The guns were being pointed to our right. Or do you keep driving to get out of the scene? So we stopped to allow the police vehicles to get to go where they needed to go. And the minute that it was safe and the police vehicles were off the road, the rest of us drove away so we weren't involved in whatever that scene was. And for a civilian, that was the most exciting part of my day. That was the most exciting thing that happened. I mean, I don't mean exciting in a good way. I mean, it got your blood level, got your adrenaline racing. The Phoenix Police Department, and the reason why I went into this big, long story is the headline says Police officer hiring in the U.S. increased in 2023 after years of decline, according to a survey. More sworn officers were hired in 2023 than any one of the previous 4 years, and fewer officers overall resigned or retired, according to the survey. It isn't just public attitude toward policing. It is city management toward policing. And I'm happy to say that Carlos Garcia leaving the Phoenix City Council, who was and I had Mr. Garcia in the studio, nice guy, but anti-cop. He was anti-cop. They very big part of the defund the police movement. When city councils and prosecutor's offices and other places began to demonize the police, cops left. They just decided, I'm not risking my life. I'm not risking my career. I'm not going to do these things. You have a family to think of as well. I don't care if you are a man or a woman that's a police officer. You have people that love you. You have people that love you that understand that you are called to a job that risks your life. But when they are not, what they will not tolerate is watching management of a city or county or whatever that is going to have an attitude that you're somehow the problem. And when that began to happen in places like Seattle and in the Pacific Northwest in general, when it happened in LA and Minneapolis was a big cause of it, that doesn't mean officers didn't do horrible things at times. Cops do the wrong thing. To demonize the profession. There's a story just out again this weekend. My comparison that I always make. There was a story that came out again this weekend. Another teacher in Queen Creek, which is not obviously not a huge school district yet, but another educator in the Queen Creek area was caught or accused of showing inappropriate things to a minor. We know that in Peoria, there's a guy that was well known as a Suns fan that's accused of asking for and getting videos and inappropriate pictures and images from students on campus. No one is demonizing, and I'm certainly not demonizing, the profession of being an educator. No one is believing that the majority of people enter that profession so that they can prey upon children, although it happens. You acknowledge the person did it, you fire that person, you put them in jail, and you get rid of them quickly. That's what you do. And you allow everybody else to go on with their lives. And attitudes toward policing are changing in that way. And it's a good thing. And we're seeing improvement in crime statistics because of it. The makeup mafia. These are women. Three women were busted with $560,000 worth of cosmetics during an undercover operation with the Phoenix Police Crime Bureau in conjunction with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office and their Organized Retail Crime Task Force. We are seeing better results with less people employed. Attitudes towards policing is changing. It's changing for the better. And because of that, more officers are staying in the profession and more people are going back to wanting to be in the profession. Let's keep that going. Let's make sure our elected officials and the people that run the towns we live in understand how much we want a safe place with a great police force. In the 10 o'clock hour, we are going to do what we always do, which is our ballot breakdown. And we're going to talk about the economy, but also polls and what they're saying about not just the presidential election, but other important elections across the country. We'll break it down next.